Good afternoon, I'm Louis Sines, and welcome to this week's edition of The Weekend. And joining us on The Weekend today are Richard Teschner and Scott Cutler, and they are both former UTEP miners. I guess they're retired UTEP miners. Richard is a professor emeritus, and Scott, as you know, was the curator of the Centennial Museum. He retired recently, but they're still working heavily as volunteers, and they're here to talk about the Casner Range National Monument Initiative. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Well, thank you, Louis, for inviting us.
Thank you, Louis.
And tell us a little bit, first of all, about Casner Range, because there's a big history behind it. In fact, you and I were talking about this, Richard, that when I was in the Boy Scouts, we went on a camp out there.
Casner Range started up in 1926, when the War Department, as it was called, through Fort Bliss, purchased approximately 3,500 acres of land on what is now Casner Range to the west of the U.S. 54 freeway. Casner Range, of course, is located in the northeast side between the U.S. 54 Patriot Freeway and the eastern boundary of the Franklin Mountain State Park. And then in 1939, Casner Range expanded considerably. An additional 4,828 acres were added to Casner Range, and that was the largest Casner Range ever was, 8,328 acres. Some of what used to be Casner Range is now located to the east of the U.S. 54 Patriot Freeway on land that ceased to be part of Casner Range in the early 1970s when it was transferred to the city.
As far as Fort Bliss owning this, was it used for military exercises, or what did Casner Range, what was it used for, Scott?
It was used as a firing range, so there was a lot of munitions that were shot over there as the soldiers were practicing using small arms as well as large caliber munitions. A lot of that exploded and did what it was supposed to, but some of it, they turned out to be duds, or they didn't explode at the time. So it kind of left a legacy of some unexploded munitions that remain on the land. And because of that, the Army has not allowed people to use it ever since it was closed in, I think it was 1966. So it's remained this beautiful open area with a few roads and trails that were remnants of the time when the Army used it. But it's essentially remained this beautiful natural area that people in El Paso have wanted to see protected ever since the state park was formed. And in fact, that was one of the initial thoughts, was that they were hoping when the legislature, the Texas legislature, created the Franklin Mountain State Park, that they would include the 7,000-plus acres that remained of Casner Range in that designation. But because of the unexploded ordnance, the state didn't want to be involved with it, so they left it with the Army. And since that time, many people locally have been trying to find a way to get it preserved and protect it from being developed more than it has been. As Richard mentioned, there was roughly 12 or 1,300 acres that was transferred from Casner Range to the city, which was used as development. What people have been hoping for is to prevent that from happening to the western part of it, so that it can remain as open space for people to eventually be able to use as hiking, biking areas, and also just for the scenic value that it has. It's a tremendous asset to the city as a view shed, also as water control, you know, for runoff from rainstorms and things like that. So it has a lot of very great qualities that we feel should be protected. And so many of the efforts through the years have been to try and find somebody that would pay to have it all cleaned up and transfer it to the state. Recently, with the designation of the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument to the north of us in New Mexico, we began to think that Casner Range would be a perfect candidate for national monument status. It has as many qualities as many other national monuments have. It is right in the middle of an urban area and would be very accessible to a lot of people, and I think would draw lots of people from around the country, perhaps even around the world, to come to El Paso and see some of the special features that Castner Range has.
But tell us exactly what needs to happen and what people need to do if they're interested in all this, Richard.
Yes, the campaign, pardon me, the initiative to make Castner Range a national monument is well advanced. And ever since November 13th, and especially ever since the middle of December of last year when Congressman O'Rourke filed House of Representatives Proposal 4268, the expanded Castner Conservation Conveyance Committee, that is to say those of us who are very active in this, has been collecting signatures on letters of support. Most recently at a town meeting, Congressman O'Rourke announced that we now have over 21,000 individual letters of support. We also have close to 100 letters of support signed by local businesses and professional organizations. We have letters of support signed by veterans groups, by civic associations, by neighborhood associations, by faith-based organizations, and the list just goes on and on and on. And all of this is extremely important to convince the folks in Washington, D.C., especially the Department of the Interior and the Bureau of Land Management, that there is local support for this endeavor. And indeed, there is quite a lot of local support for this endeavor. We've gotten a lot of good television coverage. We've gotten proclamations supporting Castner Range as a national monument signed by the city council, by the county commissioner's court, by the Public Service Board of the El Paso Water Utilities, by the Neighborhood Coalition, by all six members of our state delegation, that is to say Senator Rodriguez and then the five House of Representatives members. And so there is considerable support for this at the local level. It's fair to say that there is no local opposition to this whatsoever. The problem, of course, is convincing the folks in Washington, D.C. that this is a good project. And Scott is about to go to Washington, D.C. this month, and I myself will be going to Washington, D.C. next month to interact with people at the Department of the Interior, the Bureau of Land Management, and the Commission on Environmental Quality, which reports directly to the White House. In turn, Congressman O'Rourke has been very active in supporting this, meeting with lots of people. His staff, in turn, has met with lots of people in Washington, D.C., and so we are frankly optimistic that this can happen if House Bill 4268 is not approved by the House and then the Senate and then by the conference committee. It is entirely possible that President Obama will use the authority he has under the 1906 Antiquities Act, which was passed in the presidency of Teddy Roosevelt, to simply declare the 7,081 acres of Castner Range to the west of the U.S. 54 freeway to be a national monument, just as he declared a much larger acreage north of the state line in New Mexico to be the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument 2 years ago. So we are optimistic.
People might ask, since there's so much local support for it, what would keep the federal government from saying, okay, we'll do it?
There are a lot of communities in the United States who are asking to have areas in their districts declared national monuments. So there's a lot of competition for it, and all of them, I'm sure, are very valid ones. So we're hopeful that the president or the Congress will step up and sort of listen to the will of the people and declare a lot of, if not all of, these national monuments. But we feel that Castner Range has a good chance of being designated because there has been this long history of public support, which I think is something that the Department of the Interior and a lot of people in Washington look at, that they want to make sure that this is something that the community will back, will support in the long term, and it's not something that some politician is just doing as kind of a pork barrel thing just to make himself look good, but it's something that the people really want. And I think this is the reason that Congressman O'Rourke has stepped up to be a part of this, because he's seen over the years how strong the public support has been for Kastner Range and how consistent it has been through the decades, really. And he felt that this was a good opportunity to try and make this a reality now, to make the wishes of the local community a reality.
A lot of times people, well, all of us, we kind of ignore something. We don't notice it. It's in our front yard, or we drive by it and we don't notice it until somebody points it out. And so, Richard or Scott, if you wouldn't mind telling us exactly, for people who, let's say, driving from Northeast El Paso across Trans Mountain or the other way around, what are some of the areas that you all are looking at that we may want to point out to our listeners?
Well, one thing most people are unaware of is that 25% of the Franklin Mountains lie within the boundaries of Kastner Range. When the Franklin Mountain State Park was declared in 1979 and its boundaries adjusted in 1981 by the Texas legislature, everyone assumed, well, we've conserved the Franklin Mountains. Well, we conserved a lot of the Franklin Mountains, but not all of them, because, as I say, 25% lie within the boundaries of Kastner Range. The boundaries of the range are these: on the south, Hondo Pass Drive; on the east, the US 54 Patriot North-South Freeway; on the north, the North Hills Subdivision, which is where Chuck Heinrich Park is located; and on the west, the eastern boundary of the Franklin Mountain State Park itself. The boundaries of Kastner Range go almost all the way up to the top of Trans Mountain, up to the mile-high Smuggler's Pass or Smuggler's Gap that constitutes the high point on the Trans Mountain Road, otherwise known as Loop 375. And so a lot of the Franklin Mountains lie within the boundaries of Kastner Range, and that's one of, you know, about 4,233 reasons why Kastner Range should be conserved. Something that deserves mentioning is the fact that there exists a precedent for conserving Kastner Range. Many people have said, well, how can you conserve a former artillery range? And my short response to that question is Fort Ord. Fort Ord, O-R-D, most of it is now a national monument. It lies very close to Monterey, California, on what is known as the Central California Coast. And Fort Ord was a large Army base that lost out in the second BRAC, the Base Realignment and Closure. So from 1993 onward, Fort Ord simply lay fallow. It had been completely decommissioned as an Army base, causing lots of people in the nearby community of Seaside, California, to lose their jobs. Local citizens began to organize a campaign to make Fort Ord a national monument. And as of date, about 90% of it is a national monument, including most of the former artillery ranges on Fort Ord. Now, about half of Fort Ord is still off limits to the public. That's the part of Fort Ord that has been designated to be most heavily seeded with MECs and UXOs, munitions and explosives of concern and unexploded ordnance. But the rest of Fort Ord is open, provided that the visitors stay on the marked trails.
Correct me if I'm wrong, that a lot of people, when they hear Kastner Range, they think of just that area that they see as they're driving up Trans Mountain, heading on to the west side of El Paso, where the El Paso Museum of Natural History is and the Border Patrol Museum. They think of Kastner Range of just that flat area there, and they're going, well, why would somebody want to make this a national monument? But as you just mentioned, a lot of these areas like, you know, the Smuggler's Gap and a lot of neat trails that exist, people have never explored.
There is a lot in Kastner Range in terms of natural history and human history that would be preserved and managed if it becomes a national monument. So there are a couple of natural springs that occur there that are – springs are quite rare in the Franklin Mountains, and there are at least two or three in Kastner Range. There's a lot of evidence of early human occupation of the area and use of that site, both for living as well as for day-to-day activities like food gathering and things like that. And Richard had mentioned the unexploded ordnance and the MEX. And while those are certainly a concern, there is evidence that a lot of this stuff collected or ended up in specific areas, and the Army has actually been looking to determine where those heavy concentrations of material are, which means that there are lots of other areas that are not heavily impacted with these unexploded ordnances and could be opened up to the public. So the trick will be to work with the Army and try and utilize the information that they've gathered over the years and see where it's safe for people to go and maybe open up small portions of Kastner Range after it's designated as a national monument. But I don't think anybody is anticipating people being able to freely walk wherever they want on Kastner Range, that we have to be respectful of the potential danger that's there, but at the same time realize that there are areas of Kastner Range that are with all likelihood safe enough to walk on if you stay on the trails.
Some of the things that you mentioned, like early development, people living there, et cetera, are there trails or areas marked out right now at Kastner Range where people can go and explore?
The only place that people can hike is on the 14 acres that comprise the Archaeology Museum and the Border Patrol Museum's property, and that was all land that was cleared decades ago, back in the 70s. There are trails and roads that are on Kastner Range that are remnants of the time when the Army actively used it and had jeep roads where people could, the Army could go out and check on things. People have used Kastner Range over the years, so no doubt some trails have developed in certain places, but a lot of those I think have followed what were existing animal paths, and they've just been opened up. But the Army has been very clear that people are not supposed to hike on Kastner Range or use it in any way, so we're not advocating for people to go out there and use these roads now, but we are advocating that there is the potential for these places to be opened up to the public if and when it becomes a national monument, that there will be places that the public will be able to go.
The springs that you mentioned earlier, that sounds really interesting for hikers, but at this point, those are not available, right?
That's correct.
Have permission or...
In theory, no one is supposed to walk on Kastner Range. So another advantage to conserving Kastner Range has to do not so much with people as it does with water. It's well known that more rain falls on the eastern side of the Franklin Mountains than does on the western side because of the prevailing winds. And in particular, the northeast side seems to get more rain than any other part of town. A point that I made in the guest editorial that I published just last week in the El Paso Times was that Kastner Range is a, quote, liquid asset to El Paso, because Kastner Range in its present wild state, with the exception of the MECs and the UXOs, serves as a filter. A rainfall that falls on the eastern side of the Franklins then courses its way down the Franklins into Kastner Range, into the alluvial fan, from the arroyos to the alluvial fan, and then makes its way under the US 54 freeway to places such as the Northeast Ponding Area, which is located just to the south of Sherman Park at the northern end of the northeast side. I was out there just the other week, and I was extremely impressed by how enormous the Northeast Ponding Area is. And all of that is runoff from Kastner Range. Of course, not all of the rainfall and the runoff from Kastner Range leaves Kastner Range. Much of it sinks into the soil and makes its way directly into the Hueco Bolson, which El Paso depends on heavily for its groundwater. And so there are many reasons to conserve Kastner Range, not the least of which is the fact that we live in a desert average annual rainfall just 8 inches. In effect, we are in a permanent drought until such time as we get a flood. And once we get that flood, we have to conserve the floodwaters that arise.
And most recently, I'm not sure if it was on Casner Range or Doña Ana County Range, but they had Iranian or Iraqi village that soldiers did some training there as well?
Yeah, that was not Casner Range.
Okay.
Casner Range, with the exception of the use of the Vietnamese village, which closed down in 1971, has not been at all used for military purposes. And there's a reason for that. By the mid-1960s, the city of El Paso's neighborhoods were growing out into what is now the northeast side. Houses had been built right up to Hondo Pass. Houses were being built to the east of what is now the U.S. 54 freeway. The northeast side was booming. As is well known, many retired military live there today. And so that is the reason why the decision was made in 1966 to close the range down. And with the exception of the Vietnamese village, it has been closed since 66. A number of interesting things have happened on Casner Range, especially in 1953, when a Hollywood movie was actually filmed, mostly on Casner Range, parts of it also in the Fort Bliss cantonment area. This was a Hollywood movie starring Richard Widmark.
Hit the High Road?
Yeah, it was called Take the High Ground. Take
ground.
The High Ground. And it was your typical Korean War era film. Filming began when the Korean War was still raging and continued after the armistice was signed in July of 1953. The movie was reasonably popular. I've seen excerpts of it, and it features Casner Range. You can definitely see the Franklin Mountains in the background. You can see what is now Casner Range in the foreground. Of course, the northeast side had not yet begun to fully develop as of 1953, but the cameras made it a point not to show whatever development existed in the film. Another historical event that took place on and near Casner Range was the San Andres Salt Trail. The San Andres Salt Flats now form part of the White Sands National Monument up in New Mexico. White Sands National Monument is surrounded by the White Sands Missile Range. And the San Andres Trail, as I say, went in part through what is now Casner Range. Back in the 17th, 18th, and early 19th century, people depended heavily on salt to preserve meat in particular, since there was no refrigeration. And inhabitants of El Paso's valleys would make the long trek up north to the San Andres Salt Flats in order to get salt. In fact, a war, quote unquote, was fought in 1854 over this. By then, the San Andres Salt Flats were part of the United States, part of the New Mexico Territory, and American laws of private ownership prevailed over what had been the King of Spain's and subsequently the Republic of Mexico's policy whereby the salt was free to everyone. And so the people who had been using the San Andres salt flats for their salt suddenly found they were going to have to pay, and they rebelled against that, and three people were actually killed, although the deaths occurred in what is now New Mexico and not on Casner Range. As far as we know, no one has ever been killed on Casner Range.
And there have been some threats, as we discussed, in the 1980s where that fire broke out. And it was, thanks to Fort Bliss and El Paso Fire Department, it was put out rather quickly.
Yeah, there have been fires on the range from time to time, sort of a natural occurrence. But those are to be expected. My personal hope is that when Casner Range is formed, there'll still be a relationship between the Army and the Bureau of Land Management, if they are the ones that would be managing it, so that the resources of the Army can help in the management, whatever management is designed, and certainly Fort Bliss has people already trained to work with unexploded ordnances to detonate IEDs. So they would be a perfect candidate, I think, to help with any problems that might arise on Castner Range. So there are lots of opportunities for partnerships, I think.
And what about opportunities for our listeners if they want to perhaps attend some of these, if you're going to have some more town hall meetings or need to sign a petition? What can our listeners do to support this?
Yeah, our last big event was the annual Poppies Festival, which, as everyone knows, takes place on the 17-acre wilderness park grounds, that is to say where the Museum of Archaeology and the Border Patrol Museum are located. Excuse me. And at that event, Congressman O'Rourke spoke. Typically about 3,000 people attend this event every year. It was held this year on Saturday, April 2nd. And much publicity was given to the Castner Range National Monument Initiative. Subsequent events will be announced before they happen. The executive director of the Frontera Land Alliance, Janae Renaud Field, is currently on her annual two-week vacation. She's originally from central Michigan, and she and her daughter went up there for 2 weeks of actual vacation. But when Janae returns and when Judy Ackerman returns from the vacation that she and her husband Jamie are taking in Pennsylvania, I'm sure that more events will be planned and we'll get moving again. We're taking, in effect, a two-week hiatus.
If I could interject, we do have a place where people can go and sign petitions. There's an online site called Castner Forever. That's Castner, C-A-S-T-N-E-R, the number four, and ever, E-V-E-R, .org. And there they put that in. They'll come up to a website that has a link to the letters. They can sign those online, or they can print them off and mail them in to the Frontera Land Alliance. There's a letter or an address in that space for them to do that. So that would be right now the best way that people could get involved immediately. And there's also information there about contacting the Frontera Land Alliance, who is the local coordinator of this initiative. And so they can get that information on that website, castnerforever.org.
Thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Richard Teschner and Scott Cutler, and they are representing the Castner Range National Monument Initiative. And again, if you want to sign the petition, you can go to Castner, the number four, ever.org. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louis.
Thank you, Louis.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Evan Walsh. Our producers are Lauren Terrazas and Eddie Rosales. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sines.